This is Real Raw Radio. It's the new 102.5 The Bone.
Good morning. This is Sunday morning, a news and public affairs program courtesy of Cox Media Group, Tampa Bay. I am Jeff Slater, and this morning we're going to learn about the easy way, if there really is one, the easy way to get a divorce. Good morning. Today we're going to talk about divorce, but not nasty, hateful divorce, but amicable divorce. How can we get along when we are separating? And it does happen. It's something called collaborative law divorce. And the website you want to go to learn more is nextgenerationdivorce.com. We have two professionals in the studio to talk about it this morning. A great attorney, Joran Jenkins, and a divorce lender who's going to help talk about what do you do with your property when you decide you want a divorce. One couple wants to keep the house. The other couple wants the house divided. How are we going to do that? There are paperwork and things you need to do to get that in order. We have Alan Weisefell, who is going to be with us in just a minute. I want to start off with Joran this morning. Is there really such a thing as a simple divorce, Joran, or a collaborative law divorce where it's really easy on both parties?
You know, it's a funny thing. People think divorce has to be awful and scary. And, you know, there's so many questions. How do I tell my spouse? How much is it going to cost me? How long is it going to take? All of those big questions. But in collaborative divorce, we really take the difficulty out of the situation. But it's not just two lawyers anymore. Now we use other collaborative professionals to help the couple get to that finish line, still talking to each other, still parenting their kids. We like to say that we get people the final decree, but we also give them a bachelor's degree in getting good co-parenting skills in place, better communication skills. Obviously, if they're getting divorced, they've lost some of that ability to communicate anymore. So we go back to basic communication skills and listening skills, active listening, all of those things, those skills that it takes to be good co-parents, even though you're divorced.
Well, how would you talk somebody into getting into this type of divorce collaborative law when it hasn't been really friendly for the last couple of months? In fact, he's already moved out and he's staying at the Notel Motel and they're not talking. And boy, they're just ready to go for the jugular. But you know, in the back of their minds are like, you know, really, let's just get this over with. How would you talk them into it?
You know, it's so funny because every couple is different. I like to tell people every divorce is unique. Every couple is unique. Every marriage is unique. The description you're giving me of people who've already separated, actually, most of the time, once they've been separated for a while, things have started calming down. Not every time, of course, but most of the time. So, what I tend to do is I ask people, let's not, you know, you come to me, I know you want a divorce. Let's not talk about how horrible she is or, you know, the horrible things that he's done lately. Let's talk about what you want your life to look like 5 years from now. That way I can get them focused on what their true goals are, not the goal of, you know, I don't want him having the kids every Saturday. We have swim lessons every Saturday. I do that with them. He knows that. I don't want him there. No, we don't focus on the short term. We focus on the long term. When you get people focusing on their actual real goals, then it's much easier to get to the finish line in a nice way.
How is the state of Florida different when it comes to getting a divorce than other states? Because I have never been through this, but I have many friends who say, boy, state of Florida is just the most anti-male state when it comes to getting a divorce. You're shaking your head no. True or false?
You know, I don't practice law in other states, although I used to be licensed in D.C., and I have, like anybody, friends everywhere who've been divorced everywhere. And I have lawyer friends who do divorce work in other states. The states don't differ that much, but what you do have is minor differences in counties. Every county has their own little ways of doing things. And quite frankly, every judge has his or her own way of doing things. So the big rules are out there, and they're set by, you know, usually the state Supreme Court or the legislature, depending on which kind of rules we're talking about. But the little tiny procedural things that take you to get there, those are every single judge, every single county.
Since we're talking about the different states, then what happens when we have a couple that's already separated? They're knowing they're going to get divorced, and he's already got a job in Kentucky. She's here with the kids. How are we going to get, you know, them into collaborative law? Because now we're crossing state lines and he may have a divorce attorney up north.
Well, every state, again, is different as far as those requirements go. There's certain things like residency requirements before you get divorced. Generally speaking, I think you'll find the rule is that you get divorced in the state where you last lived together as a couple. And that may not be absolutely true everywhere. I don't know that for a fact, obviously. But generally speaking, the first place you look is the place where they last lived together as a couple.
Now, is Florida the only state that's doing this collaborative law divorce?
Oh, my goodness, no.
No?
No, it's big. And it started up in Minnesota. Started in Minnesota. But it's gotten very large in California and in Texas prior to just exploding in Florida in recent years, just recently.
And again, the website is nextgenerationdivorce.com if you want to go there and learn more. We're talking about collaborative divorce, which means basically a nice way we're all going to get along. We're going to split things up and we're just going to say, hey, this isn't working out. We're going to split it and we're going to be nice. It's not going to be a bloodbath in a courtroom. And we're talking to Joran Jenkins, who is an attorney and also what we call a divorce lender. Alan Weinsefeld is in the studio with us this morning. And Alan kind of handles the financial side of things when it comes to the residence. And it's something I have not really thought about until you and I were talking off mic, that there's a lot of work that a couple needs to do before they even file for divorce when it comes to home ownership and property rights, correct?
Yeah, a lot of it is preparation work, right? I mean, you go into every situation, like Joran said, and it's unique. You know, sometimes one party wants to keep the house, and a lot of times married couples are both on loans together. And they'll go through the divorce process, and they'll agree that one person is going to keep the house, they're going to refinance the loan to take the other person off of the loan, and that the other party is going to deed their ownership back to them. Well, you know, what I found early on in my career was that a lot of people would agree to that without finding out if it was actually possible. If that the person was going to keep the house actually qualified for the loan or not. And, you know, once the divorce is final, it's very hard to go back and change anything. And so what you find is, you know, people having a difficulty moving on with their lives and proceeding because of this loan that both of them are on together. If the person who moved out wanted to go on and buy their own house, well, maybe they don't qualify because they're still obligated on this other loan. And the other person doesn't qualify to refinance, and they're stuck, right? And I've seen a lot of people file bankruptcy, foreclosures happen, and just, you know, financial tragedy happen after those things go forth.
Unnecessarily.
Yes.
Yeah, no, what about if a couple, and we do see this a lot here in the Tampa Bay area, couples that have investment properties or rental properties where they may have a condo at the beach that they rent out to people that come in from out of town. Now, how would they have to deal with that when they're going through a divorce? Same thing with a home?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on if there's a loan on it or not. And even if there's not, and one of them wants the equity stake in it, right? It's a broad picture at that point of you're putting everything together, but the small pieces where they're obligated on properties together is going to affect that. So if they don't determine what can be done before deciding what will be done, they're not necessarily making the right decision as far as how to finalize that divorce.
Now, it sounds like a very complicated process. Is it really?
It's not complicated if you start early, right? If you get in front of the right person early on, you can look at things and say, okay, these are the options that I have. So when they meet, they can actually work through those different options and come up with something that works for both parties.
Now, getting back to the investment properties then, what if both the male and the female, the husband and the wife, say, you know what, we're making a pretty good living just off this rental property. I'd kind of like to keep it going. I'd kind of like to split it 50-50 with you if you would do that. Is that something that you would also look into?
Yeah, they can look into that, you know. So the place that I would come in at that point is if there's debt on the property. If they owe money on it, and they agree they want to keep that income going forth, well, that's going to affect something else in the divorce. Who's going to get that income? You know, are they splitting it?
Yeah, if they agree to split it 50-50.
Right. And then so, okay, are we agreeing then to stay, if let's say there's a loan on this property, are we agreeing to stay on that loan together? That's best case scenario, right? We're going to split the income equally. We're both going to stay on this loan. Easy, you're done. It becomes contentious if one person wants it and the other person also wants it.
Jordan, you're not in your head. Is that something you see or something that is possible under this
collaborative? Worse still is where you have a couple in business together and they're running their small business. It's a valuable little business, but they discover that one of them alone can't make it work nearly as well and they need to stay in business together. And that's yet another scenario. But you posit situations that absolutely do happen. And of course, collaboratively, because we take away the hard feelings that sometimes erupt, or at least salve them and don't let them flame out of proportion, people can stay, co-owners on a property. And sometimes if they decide they really can't, then we go to Alan and we say, look, one of us needs to buy the other one out. How do we arrange that? And that's the thing about Alan's work. Because if he comes in early on and he tells me, husband's not going to qualify for that loan once he's paying alimony. We're going to need to set this up before he's liable for alimony so that we can get it done ahead of time. Well, most lawyers will say, don't execute a quitclaim until after the deed. But Alan might tell me, no, we need to get this done before. We're all in agreement that this is how it's going to work, and this is how we're going to make them both qualify for what they need to qualify for, whatever that is. Then we all are in agreement and we get it done. In collaborative, we're totally transparent. So we all trust each other. Even though I'm the wife's lawyer and that guy over there is the husband's lawyer, we're all working on the same team to get them to the finish line.
Well, Adam, what happens then if neither couple really qualifies for the loan? Let's say that they were one of the lucky few several years ago when the housing boom was going on and we were getting loans willy-nilly. And we know that the properties were jacked up in value. Now they're not worth what they're worth. And you've got a couple, neither one of them, they're in credit card debt. And maybe they owe still school loans. And you've got to break down to them and say, look, neither one of you are going to get this property.
Yeah, and that may become the point when, you have to talk to a real estate professional about selling the property. Okay. And, we have a person that's a part of our group named Randy Friedman, who's very good as far as that's concerned. And you bring him in situations where, okay, I've talked to both people. They don't qualify, right? Neither one of them is going to be able to keep this house and finance it in their own name. So we need to talk about, how do they move forward being able to sell this property? Is there enough equity to sell the property? And where are they?
And how can we work together to maximize the equity right. that we get out of it?
Now, where does property taxes come into play then on the home? Is it going to go to which? Well, I have to ask though.
You do know my husband is running for property appraiser, right?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking property taxes too because they keep going up. They want to build more schools. We're looking at infrastructure and transportation. Property taxes keep going up every year. How do they agree with that in the divorce? Is it just going to be whoever owns the home or is that something that is figured up between, the lawyers?
So you mean talking about property taxes in terms of who keeps the property?
Well, no, once you have the property, are both couples still in charge of property taxes, or is it going to be the homeowner that actually takes over the home?
Whoever takes over the home will be obligated on the property taxes.
Right.
Once the person who's leaving the home quit claim deeds their ownership interest in that property back to the person who refinanced to take them off the loan, they're no longer obligated at all on that home.
Not at all.
No.
No obligation whatsoever. And same thing with the rental property. When they have to pay the property taxes there or sales taxes, that's all on the person whose name is on the paper.
Right.
Now, Jordan, I got to ask you, since we're talking about this, what if one person says that, I want the house, but I'm not going to pay the property taxes. I want them to pay the property taxes. Now, you say everything's transparent and on the table. We're all working together. How do you argue that and say
that could be a sensible deal for some reason that I can't fathom right at the moment. Typically, liabilities travel with the ownership of the liability-causing entity, whether it's a business or a piece of real estate. But it might make sense for a husband to agree that wife can keep the house and he'll pay the mortgage for the first year. He'll pay the property taxes for the first year. I mean, you can agree in collaborative. You can agree to a lot of things that a judge could never order if it makes sense to you. So, for example, typical example, a judge cannot order in the state of Florida, cannot order someone to pay for college for his kids. Can't order it. It's not something that's ever even on the table. And yet, in collaborative cases and mediated cases and anything courtless, a couple can sit down and agree, absolutely, daddy's going to pay for college, and that's a promise that he's making to mama, and it's going in a contract called a marital settlement agreement, and that agreement can later be enforced by a judge. So you can agree to anything that is not illegal in a marital settlement agreement.
You just said a word there that kind of, you know, pricked my ears up here. You said courtless. This basically is a divorce that is not even handled through the courts. I don't have to go in front of a judge. Therefore, there would be no public record, wouldn't
there? Now, keep this. You bring up an excellent point. Courtless. It's not no court at all. You can't get a divorce without going in front of a judge. But it's courtless because you're in front of a judge for 3 minutes instead of 3 years.
So would it still keep my matters more private than if we went into a courtroom and had a knockdown, drag out, real big fight divorce?
Okay, so someone prepped you for this, I think, because of course, one of the big things that we sell when we tell people you really want to try the collaborative option is not only is it completely transparent between you and your spouse, but it is totally as private as we can possibly make it. Now, there's an example of how counties can differ, because in Hillsborough County, most of our judges will allow no financial affidavits to be completed. You complete a financial affidavit and you show it to your spouse, and your spouse has one and prepares that and shows it back to you. Completely transparent. Those go in the court file. I had a client once who was stalked by someone who had read her court file and found out how much she got in her divorce.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell that story another time. It was a horrible situation. But everything's in the court file, and you can find out about people that way. If the financial affidavit is never put into the court file, or at least the one that goes in doesn't have any private information on it, then your life is still private. And of course, there are people who really value that privacy. Most people aren't aware that that's an option through collaborative. It's actually not an option through many other courtless choices.
We're talking about collaborative divorce, collaborative law divorce. The website you want to go to is nextgenerationdivorce.com. And basically, to put it in layman's terms, it's not easy, but it's maybe a better way for you to go through a divorce if you and your spouse decide that it's just not working out. We're willing to split things. We're not going to fight. Let's just get this over with. And a lot more people are doing it. Nextgenerationdivorce.com. When we're talking about divorce, we're always thinking it's very emotional, not for the couples alone, but for the kids and really for other family members, because the older generation, they're still married. My parents just celebrated their 55th, God bless, wedding anniversary, and they get disappointed when their kids get divorced. Why couldn't you make it work? There's always that pressure from the family. So it's really an emotional thing. How does this help somebody in the emotional arena going through the collaborative divorce rather than the knockdown dragout? Because we got some real bitchy mother-in-laws, though, who want you to go to court and take him for everything he's got.
You know, it's funny because I tell people that in the collaborative process, we actually protect relationships. And I say we protect, obviously, your relationships with your children, with your neighbors who really don't want to get served and have to come to court to testify, with the teachers of your kids, with your kids' grandparents, your in-laws. And yes, your soon-to-be ex, we protect that relationship as well. Even though right now it feels pretty contentious, it's going to get better because of what we do. And the way we do it is we use a facilitator in the process who is expert in body language, in communication skills, in facilitating that conversation around divorce and around distributing the assets and around time sharing with the kids and all of that. And quite frankly, to be honest, the lawyers in this process tend to become much more facilitative than they ever were used to in the courtroom. And so do the financial professionals. We have CPAs who are absolutely phenomenal facilitators. But it's the licensed family counselors, the psychologists who fill that facilitative role. That's their chief function.
How about child support? How does that differ from, and I keep saying this when it's a knockdown, drag out, bloody divorce to collaborative law, how was it different when it comes to child support?
Child support is that one thing that is set in Florida by statute. So there's a number, and the number, there's the amount you make, there's the amount your spouse makes, and then there's the time sharing, and all those numbers get crunched, and out pops another number under the statute. That's the number of your child support, each of you. Now, having taken that number, the question is, can you manipulate that number? And of course, there are special things that happen in people's lives. A child needs special education. Child needs special schooling because she's going to be an Olympic gymnast. So there are ways that that number can be impacted, but that's probably the one thing that you have to go by the statute regardless. In order to get your final judgment signed by a judge.
And then once you get that final signed judge paper, it's all over with. We're done. We shake hands. We walk away. It's that simple.
We did the first collaborative pro bono divorce here in Hillsborough County. And Judge Lee was the judge. We all went to the courthouse with the couple, both husband and wife went to the courthouse with us. We took photos with the judge, and the judge remarked afterwards, she said, you know, this was more like a wedding. Everybody was smiling at each other, and it was kind of weird. I kind of like this collaborative thing. We need to do more of this.
Now, once, and I'm real ignorant when it comes to getting divorces, once all this is done, is there anything we can come back and amend? Let's say we find out down the road, son of a bitch was cheating on me, and now I'm mad. I didn't know before, but now I'm mad. So now I want to go in and I want to go after him. Can they do that?
Well, this is the problem with divorce. A divorce is never done until the kids reach majority, and then you're pretty much done unless there's alimony.
Right.
And in which case, that portion could go on forever until one of the parties dies. So you can always go back to court. The thing that I tell my clients is, you know, the only thing that people learn when they go to court is how to go to court. That's all they learn. In collaborative, we teach co-parenting, we teach communication, we teach problem solving, we teach brainstorming skills that people can go back to each other with after the fact if they have another dispute later. Now, the dispute that you posit is like the horrifying one that, you know, and yeah, she's pissed off and she's going to go back to, if she's really that pissed off, she's going to drag him into court just because she wants to. And that's, we can't help those people. If all they want to do is litigate, then, you know, they probably ought to find a different lawyer.
And that's what they'll do. They'll find a different lawyer and make that lawyer rich and meanwhile go broke. How important is your relationship with Alan in this whole collaborative divorce and you guys do?
Alan and I are writing a book together, so
our
relationship is pretty important.
Well, we're going to talk about that coming up in just a minute, but I mean, how do you call him right away? You say, look, this
now
couple is
I do.
Ready to
no,
do it.
No, what you need to understand and everyone listening needs to understand is until I met Alan, I did not realize, and I've been practicing law for 36 years. I've been doing divorce work for 24 years. I did not realize that I should be calling Alan at the beginning of these cases.
Really?
It never occurred to me. And quite frankly, I'm a smart lawyer. It never occurs to most lawyers. Now that I know, Alan is one of the first people I call when I have a new case.
And Alan, what are the first questions you have to ask Jurin then when you pick up that phone and she goes, I got another couple coming in and they got a beautiful home. It's up in town and country and here's what it's worth and here's what they owe. What do you got to start, your wheels got to start turning immediately?
Yeah, hopefully at that point, some conversations have happened about, you know, who wants to stay in the house? You know, what do they owe on it? You know, and you know, is there going to be alimony? All the details that are going to affect whether or not that person would qualify, right? And so then at my end, it's a documentation gathering. It's, you know, income, assets.
So you're like an investigator almost, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, the loan process now is much different than it was, you know, before the market collapsed. You know, now it's more like an audit in reverse. You have to be very precise about things. We have to prove everything. So I look at all those details, pay stubs, W-2s, tax returns, bank statements, you know, property taxes on the property, homeowner's insurance, their current mortgage statement. And you compile all these things together and we say, okay, what do you want to do? Maybe there's a significant amount of equity in the property. You know, they need to know how much of that equity they actually have access to. Because if they've got $100,000 in equity and they agree to split it 50-50, but they only have access to $30,000, they can't. They can't split it 50-50. So you have to work through those things and say, okay, here's what can be done. right? Here are the mm-hmm. different options that you have available to you to finance this property and remove that other person from the loan. Now you can go work through the different option development and figure out what you both can agree to.
Like, you see so many commercials on TV, and they look awful shady to me, for home financing. You see these very late at night on TV. And let's say you've got a couple that comes to you and says, well, we saw this commercial on TV, Alan, and, you know, they're going to give us guaranteed financing, and she's willing to do it, and we just signed the paperwork, and then we'll go get divorced, and they can have the house. These really fly-by-night deals. That sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, it's a great thing that you brought that up, honestly, because everybody's under the same rules now. Right. Nobody can say, oh, well, we can do it differently than everybody else. After the market collapse, all those rules became very regulated. OK, so everybody has to operate under those, and everybody's going to have to gather the same documentation. So if I tell you what I can do before I look at it, it's a lie. I don't know. Right. So there's always going to be some fine print there. And until they see those things, they don't really know. Let's say this is what we can do. This is what we could do. And it's a very fine line there between, you know, just bad advertising and bad information.
Well, if you look at the bottom of the screen, there's a lot of small print that right. you couldn't read with a magnifying glass, too. So everybody now is under the same law, under the umbrella of the law.
Right.
Wow, I didn't know that. Now, before we go, because we've only got about a couple of minutes left, we've already almost gone a half hour here, gang. What about this book you just mentioned here? I want to know about the book. What's the book about?
It's about divorce lending, and it's not lending so that you can fund your divorce, which people have to do when they litigate. It's about how to make the home situation for both people getting divorced. What they want it to be, how to approach that ahead of time, what happens when you don't. I mean, Alan and I have a situation right now where I'm in litigation, quite frankly. Husband is on the mortgage because he is husband, so mm-hmm. his name has to be on the mortgage. Apparently, those are the rules. He didn't sign the note. He's not on the deed. So he has no liability on that property. This couple is in litigation solely because he wants his name off the mortgage, because he's convinced that he is liable on that mortgage, and he's not. So we have this type of situation.
Well, how does Alan then get into that situation where the husband wants his name off that?
I called him up and I said, I need you to talk to this guy.
And what'd you say?
Well, at that point, it's information. Most people don't really understand what a mortgage is. The mortgage is a legal document that's giving the bank security interest in that property until the loan's paid off. It has nothing to do with ownership, okay? So this, the wife in this case purchased this property on her own. She's the only one on title to the home, but because the law in the state of Florida requires a married couple to both sign the mortgage, the security instrument, he had to sign it. And he believes that if she refinances, that will take him off the mortgage. If they refinance and they're still married, he has to sign it again. Because that's the law.
Oh, there's the rub. Yeah, okay, yeah, now yeah. Now it's sinking into my brain, because now I can understand why he doesn't right. want his name
right.
on that.
Right.
Because if she stops making payments, then he's in trouble too.
No, it wouldn't affect him at all.
No, it wouldn't.
No, he's not liable.
Obligated on the loan, and he's not on title, so he has no obligation to pay.
But his name's just
taxes.
On the mortgage,
right?
Because they're married.
Yes.
This is why you need an attorney.
or a good lender.
Or a good lender, because they can explain it to you and get it all figured
or
out.
Or you can buy the book when it's done.
What's the name of the book? Do we know yet?
No, we don't know.
We'll get that. We'll get it out
might
to
be,
people.
It might be Who Gets the House.
Who Gets the House.
Which I thought was Alan's idea. I think it's a great title.
Wonderful idea. NextGenerationDivorce.com. We've been talking to Joran Jenkins, attorney at law, and Alan Weinzefel, who is basically in the real estate lending side of things when a couple is going through a separation and a divorce. We got 1 minute left, guys. Is there anything we didn't talk about when it comes to collaborative law divorce you think it's important our listeners hear this morning?
Well, you know, collaborative is not as cheap as sitting at the kitchen table and doing it yourself. But it's a lot less expensive than going to war. And so that's why I called my first book War or Peace. And I tell the stories of litigation and I tell the stories of collaboration. There's magic in the conference room. That's what I say.
Well, it's not only cheaper than a knockdown, drag out. It's less stressful from what
oh,
I hear.
Oh, my goodness.
And
for the professionals.
Yeah. And for the professionals, it's even less stressful and less stressful for the couple. And Alan, just quick 30 seconds. Anything we didn't talk about you think it's important people people hear this morning?
You know, I think the most important thing to communicate from my end is to make sure that you take the time to get the right information up front, right? And don't be hasty. Don't make a knee-jerk decision. Make sure that you have all the cards on the table and all the information available to make a good decision.
You've been hearing Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs program courtesy of Cox Media Group, Tampa Bay. Have a good week.
The guy who has a comprehensive plan on how to survive the zombie apocalypse can't kill a spider without falling and breaking furniture. The Mike Calta Show. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 102.5 The Bone. Real. Raw. Radio.
This weekend, The Bone celebrates all things America. Things like apple pie, bacon, John Deere, Beyonce, Florida, and Abe Lincoln's beard.
Happy 4th of July from 102.5 The Bone. WHPT, Sarasota, Tampa, CP. It's radio like you've never heard on 102.5 The Bone.